Welcome to GoTo Gal, episode number 162. As always, I'm your host, Jacqueline Malone, and it's so funny. I always talk with my hands during this part. Well, probably always I talk with my hands, but you would think that I wouldn't need my hands for this intro, but apparently I do. I don't know. There's like a zest to my, it's almost like I'm a conductor. I don't know. Go with it. All right, so today we are not talking about my talking with my hands. We are talking about talking to your customers, though, and with that, sales and conversion copy, if you will. Now, in our industry, in this online marketing, online business world, you likely have come across the term bro marketing. I know we have discussed it here on the podcast, but likely you've come across it other places too. And there's a lot of talk about bro marketing, and we don't want to be bro marketing, and bro marketing is the past, and bro marketing is slimy and skeezy and all of these things, right? But what is the alternative? And while I think we know what the alternative is, sometimes it helps to really dive into, like, how do we make sure we're not doing the bro marketing thing? How do we make sure we're not doing those things that are going to alienate the people we want to truly help, right? And create that sense of distrust with the people who we are seeking to serve. How do we do that? Well, our guest today is a friend of mine, Sarah Frandina. She actually used to be local to me. We were in a local mastermind. We would meet up at different coffee shops every other week or something like that. Gosh, I miss those days so much. Oh, but I've seen behind the scenes of just how brilliant she is because I've also worked with her as a copywriter before. I hired her a couple of years ago for a sales page, and I was blown away at her approach to copy and how extensive and just different her process for customer research and really digging into that voice of the customer. It was so different than any other copywriter I had worked with or had even heard about before. And I'm really excited to share her with you today. One, because she has brilliant insight on this. She's going to peel back the curtain and talk about her process for doing this. It's something that you don't necessarily need to be working with a copywriter to implement. In fact, you could do this yourself or even with a virtual assistant on your team. And it's so powerful. So we're going to dive into lots of the elements of writing conversion copy, but from that empathy-focused angle, not that bro marketing angle. We are going to cover the ins and outs of what you need to do before you sit down and put pen to paper or put your fingers to the keyboard. Before you get to that place, what do you need to do? And Sarah does this in a way that is so different than much of the industry. I've worked with many copywriters over the years, and I was really blown away by her approach. And I love how she breaks it down for us in a way that's replicatable, even if you're not working with a copywriter. So we go deep, we peel this apart, and I may or may not ask for some specific feedback on some things I'm working on. And listen, I like to do that. One, I'm talking to my brilliant friend. I just can't resist asking for advice. But I also think sometimes a real example of whatever it is we're talking about, right, helps to just connect some of these dots. So you're going to hear a little bit about what's on my mind with my own copy, and hopefully that inspires you for whatever project you're working on too. Now, the copy I'm specifically asking about is for our upcoming Plug and Pitch Live. Now, you may have heard me talk about our podcast guesting plug and pitch system. It's a digital product with templates to help you pitch yourself to get on podcasts. Well, we are running it live for the first time. I don't know if we're ever going to do this again. I certainly hope so, but who knows? This is a one-time thing for right now. And I'm really excited about it. So if you've been wanting to get on podcasts and you want that extra push, that extra help and support of, okay, here's some templates and here's some training on how to fill them out. And also the live interaction of getting feedback and support and connecting with other people who are maybe even podcasters, but also other people that are pitching themselves on podcasts and me. Hello. And we're going to have prizes and we're going to have a grand old time. So if you are like, yes, this is the push I need because I keep listening to podcasts and thinking I should really be pitching myself to get on these podcasts, but you just haven't found the time to do it yet, come join us for Plug and Pitch Live. If you go to plugandpitch.com, sign up. If you have already purchased the templates, if you've already purchased the podcast guest plug and pitch system, you will be receiving an email from us very soon with an invite to join for free. So if you've had it before, you've already purchased your ticket, if you will, and anyone who joins now is welcome to come as well. So we are excited to kick things off in a week or two, depending on when you're listening to this. So go to plugandpitch.com or go to the show notes for the details. All right. Now, before we get into things, let me formally introduce you to our guest today, Sarah Frandina. Sarah Frandina is a conversion copywriter with an insatiable appetite for learning, reading, and popcorn. Her superpower is translating the thoughts and stories of others into meaningful insights that fuel empathy-based marketing and communication. She's worked with more than 100 clients, from course creators to membership hosts to service providers and more, since she started her business in 2013. When she's not busy reading between the lines of customer research, you can find Sarah getting tackled by her toddler, walking her pup, or warming up her coffee. Again, oh, I hear that so hard. All right. Without further ado, here is my conversation with Sarah. Sarah, I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
This is taking like all of my willpower in the world to not just chat your ear off for an hour because we're so overdue to connect. I'm like, we are going to record a podcast. We are going to record a podcast.
Absolutely.
So here we are. All right. Before we dive in to you and all things copy, take us back to when you were growing up. What were you the go-to gal for back then?
Oh my gosh. Depends how far back we want to go, but I have to say the thing that has carried through from the time I was probably like 4 or 5 was I was always the person you asked for book recommendations because I always had my nose in a book. So if anybody from my kindergarten class to, I mean, in first grade, I was going down to the kindergarten class to read to them. And it was just like, aww. I was that kid that was just like, you want to read a book? Let's sit here and read a book. And that really didn't change moving forward. And I'm still that person. Like my friends are like, what are you reading today? So I think that's been like the thread that's come through. And it's pretty funny because I ended up as a writer. And the number one thing I tell people when they're like, how do we become a writer, a better writer? I'm like, you read more. So yeah.
Ooh, I love that tip. Now, does reading for that specific purpose count if you're listening?
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Audiobooks, especially in this day and age. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. I think they count in terms of reading. Like I use the word liberaling for liberal. I use the word liberal. I don't even know. I forgot what I was saying. But I use the word reading very liberally in terms of I read and that means I'm listening to audiobooks, but that's good totally to know. It totally counts, but it's good to know that it counts in terms of consuming content in that way can also still help us become better at writing. Absolutely. Just hearing how other people are talking and putting sentences together or communicating big ideas. Like, what do you think that is about reading that helps us become better writers?
I think there's definitely like, you know, you do reading for self and personal development, right? And that's very learning focused, or even business books. I'm even talking fiction. Like, it is awesome to see how different authors put stories together in a way that shows us different perspectives. And then it's simply the best portal into other lives that we can't even begin to imagine. So that's why listening to it is no different than reading it, but it's really more about how are people communicating those ideas and weaving together stories. Because even as a copywriter who's very much focused on like the scientific side of conversions, I am still telling a story with every piece of copy that I write.
Oh, so true. So true. And that actually reminds me, that was the main reason I bought Mel Robbins' book, The 5-Second Rule, because I was just so fascinated by how she was able to make a whole book out of that.
Yes, absolutely.
And I love Mel, but I was really like, okay, like you can explain this in literally like a minute, maybe two, maybe five. Okay, I'll give you like a 20-minute presentation. But how are you taking this concept and turning it into a whole book? It was really fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. And she did a great job with it. But that was one of my drivers of curiosity. Okay, but now to rein it back in, let's come back to you. So fast forward to today. Tell us, what do you do and who do you help?
Awesome. So I am a certified conversion copywriter. So that simply means that I write copy that is meant to connect with an audience and drive them to take an action. I mostly work with people who have products, services, offers that they are very passionate about getting in front of the right people. And they do have some sort of focus on retaining those people, whether that's inside a membership or a course. So there's a ton of opportunity for touch points. That's really the bulk of my work.
Oh, such great advice. Okay. Question. That's kind of a big question, but I'm just really curious your thoughts on this is over the past couple of years, there's been a lot of talk about bro marketing. And I think I know from especially our go-to gal community that we care a lot about the people that we're serving. And we want to make sure that we're not coming across as spammy or bro marketers or pressuring with sales or anything like that. But when we talk about conversion copy, you know, I imagine there are some people that just have like this, like, oh, like, does that mean I'm like, you know, forcing people to make this decision or manipulating them in some way with this copy? Is there anything that you do or that's part of your process or philosophy that helps to, I guess, how is that different than these other things? Or how have you seen the industry change?
I am so glad you asked this question. So sometimes when I do say I'm a conversion copywriter, I do get a little paranoid that the immediate feeling that people are going to have is, oh, you're a smarmy marketer, right? Using all these false tactics and urgency and scarcity that doesn't actually exist. And those things are very real. We see them all the time. So where I differentiate and where voice of customer really plays into things is empathy. That is the, you know, people buy from people that they trust. They might have bought from the bro marketers or from the smarmy marketers in the past, but I can almost guarantee that they've been burned and now they're coming back to find people that they trust. The number one goal of doing voice of customer is to gain that empathy so that you know that your connection points are genuine. Then when it comes to tactics, I never ever encourage people to use things like false urgency or false scarcity, even though they do work. But what we want to learn is where their hesitations actually lie and what's going to best address them. So it's not necessarily about, so for this client that I'm working on with right now, we're going to run a webinar, right? That's a very popular sales tactic. They're going to run a webinar. They're going to sell on the webinar. But then what they're going to do is they're going to open the next 4 days for sales calls, for people to ask follow-up questions because they know that their clients like to have that personal connection with the person who's selling this program. They're going to give the opportunity for those conversations. They're also going to offer a replay, but they're going to have you email them if you want access to the replay so that they can start those conversations. It's not from a place of, oh, I want to capitalize on having your email address. It's so that I can offer you the opportunity to jump on a call if you have more questions. So looking for how you can actually offer those genuine touch points that matter to your community and still will contribute to convincing them to buy and take that action. We are all out to make decisions and to address our issues and find the right products that address our problems. So it's not like we are falling into the bro marketing trap just by selling, right? It's how we sell and the way we come at it. And the number one thing, like I said, is voice of customer, because that's going to give us that empathy that helps us actually connect with people on a genuine level.
Oh, thank you for sharing a little bit of how you think about that, because I do think it's important to to not shy away from these, from learning about these things, because it can help us with our business. And I know if you are selling something that solves someone's problem, you are helping them. So selling is a good thing, right? And showing them how it's going to help them is a good thing and is part of that process, but we want to make sure we're doing it in the right way. So
yeah. Really, and when you truly believe in what you're offering, you're going to come at it from more of a genuine aspect anyway, because I think most of us are in business to truly help the people that we are selling to, but we often fall prey to some of the scarcity and the smarmy tactics that don't feel right for us. So it's pulling back and saying, you know what, how do I want to sell? How do I want to be communicating with my people? What feels right for me? It might not be a 16 video email launch. It might be, I want to get on the phone and actually have sales conversations. Looking at the things that feel right for you are going to take out that feeling of, I'm just doing something because somebody told me I should do it.
Yes. And we have worked together in the past. I was so impressed with the amount of research that you do before sitting down to write copy that informs that copy. So would you just pull back the curtain a little bit and share with us what that is? Because a lot of times when we think about writing, we think of, or copy, we think about the actual copy, but part of the magic of what you do is everything that happens before you ever put the proverbial pen to paper.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I'm so glad you asked, because this is the bulk of my process. When I have a discovery call with a new client, the thing that always surprises them the most is when I tell them that 80% of my process is research before I ever sit down to write. And this is where, for anybody that is ever sitting down to write their own copy, the biggest problem lies is that we're sitting down in front of a blank page with nothing to work off of. I never do that. That's where that 80% comes in, where I'm going out and I am collecting what in the conversion copywriting world is called voice of customer research. And that is getting inside the heads of your customers and hearing how they talk about what they're experiencing in their life or what they get out of your offer, the outcomes that they've experienced from working with you. So it's hearing how they talk about it so that we can take that language and then start from there when we sit down to write our copy. So that's what I actually start with all of my clients. And there's so many benefits to it besides just getting us started on the page. But that is the biggest, the first place I always point people to start so that they're not just throwing spaghetti at the wall and trying to guess at what their customers are thinking.
Yes. Okay. We are going to dive into all of that in a little bit, but I'm curious a little bit about your journey. And you mentioned you were certified. What brought you to writing copy and where did the certification come in? Give us a little bit of your story that brought you to where you are now.
Awesome. Yeah. So in 2012, I was working for a tourism organization in the Finger Lakes. And I worked with a ton of small business owners in the area. And the recurring theme from all of them is that they needed more content, copywriting, and it was just a skill that they didn't have. So I started hosting some lunch and learns. And we were talking about everything from blogging to social media to emails. This was really before email marketing was really a big thing. But I was hosting those lunch and learns and thinking, like, this is really something I enjoy doing. So when I started my business, about 6 months after I had started hosting those lunch and learns, I was doing everything. I was writing blogs, I was writing case studies, white papers, sales pages, emails, websites, you name it. I really became the Jill of all trades when it came to copy. And I realized that just was not sustainable. I really wanted to become an expert in one thing. That's when I stumbled upon Copy Hackers and Joanna Weeb. She is the original conversion copywriter. She coined that term. And I did a year-long certification program with her. So that's where I got the certification from. So that entailed a year's worth of learning and then three projects at the end that she reviewed, edited, and then had to give me a pass-fail on. So that was nerve-wracking, but that was 2013 to 2014. So that's where my certification came from. And then from there, I've gradually niched down into writing strictly sales pages and email sequences, because those are typically the drivers of action. Whereas somebody's going to your website, they still need to get a really good feel for who you are, who you serve, what you offer. But it's the sales page and the email sequences where we're really driving them to actually take a very specific action.
Yes. No, it's good to distinguish the difference between maybe social media content or, you know, website copy even, and then these email sequences or sales pages that are designed with that like explicit purpose to drive them to make a decision to convert.
Yeah. And I really separate it between how I describe it is you have your nurture content. So that is your weekly email newsletter, if you're sending something like that, or your Instagram posts, anything social media, or the monthly or weekly blogs that you're putting out. That's all the content that is meant to keep you top of mind, to establish expertise, to share opinions and viewpoints. That's the important stuff that is going to keep nurturing your people. And then when I'm talking about email sequences, that's separate from, you know, your weekly newsletter. That's the sequence that is, you know, promoting a webinar or promoting an open cart on something or promoting anything that's going to drive that specific action, a discovery call with you, anything like that. So it's more of like that one-off kind of messaging after you've already done some nurturing.
That makes a lot of sense. A conversation I've been having with my team a lot lately, though, is even when we're not directly selling, I feel like everything is sales. And I know I've heard my dad say this a million times throughout my whole life and probably before I even really knew what it means. But you know, it's interesting how your parents or maybe a mentor in your life says something. And then when you're at different ages and stages, you think of it in a different way. But that keeps coming to my mind recently because I'm like, even on like an Instagram story, like what's going to get them to go to that next slide or what's going to get them to open up that newsletter or read to the end or all of those things. Do you find that it's maybe some of the same conversion copy principles that are trickled into all of these other things, or is that a little bit different?
Yeah, no, I think there's certainly overlap. And when you say everything is sales, it really is, because like I consider it, you're always dropping breadcrumbs, right? Whether you have a very direct call to action or you are mentioning something for the sake of mentioning it because people need to hear it 15 times before they will actually take action. It's all important. So, and it all will lead to those sales. So it depends on, you know, what your offer is, what your typical pipeline is, and how long. I've got clients where they offer high-end programs that it will be 7 months before people who have heard about it from at first glance, before they actually buy. And that's a normal sales cycle for them. They have to do a lot more nurturing, but it's gonna take a while. But then when they are ready for the sale, they are ready for the sale. Other times I have people that do a 5-day cart open and a 2-week promo and they see a ton of conversion. So it entirely depends on what your audience is used to and what your offer actually is. But we are always dropping breadcrumbs because no matter what, people need to hear things way more than one time in order to keep it top of mind and actually convince them to take that action.
So true. Now, one of the things that you mentioned to me before this conversation that really sparked my interest was that sometimes there's like this curse of the expert where we're talking to our audience in a certain way and we might be missing some key things. Like the way that we're talking may actually be preventing us or getting in the way of really connecting with them or showing them that they should be, you know, joining us for whatever the opportunity is. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah. So I work, almost everybody that I work with has been in business for a while. So I consider them experts, which is really awesome. And it means that they have a lot of trouble separating themselves from their offer and their messaging. So what I see two things. I see people coming in with certain biases, right? They have been running their business for a while, or they've launched their offer a few times, or they've served a bunch of people. And they just have this idea of who their person is without really thinking outside that box. The second thing that I see people doing is coming into a conversation so what kind of stifles their progress in growing their messaging or growing how they're talking to people is that they already are thinking to the next thing without taking into consideration what their audience wants. So I'm already thinking like, hey, this is the next offer I think my people need. I'm going to ask them about that instead of trying to figure out where they're starting from and seeing what the next best place they can go is. So when I come into a conversation, and this is why it's really good to have somebody that isn't you conducting your voice of customer research, because when I come into a conversation, I am trying to figure out where my customers, clients, prospects are starting from so that we can discover all the possibilities for the next best step. I just think that there's this plateau people hit when they become a really knowledgeable expert, where they are so ingrained in their offer that they're not asking themselves the questions that will bring themselves out of it. And then they can't have those conversations with their people.
No, I think that makes sense. And I think what this does too is also highlight the, okay, let's dig into what is this voice of customer research, because it is so important. When we're so used to talking about what we do, we may not even realize that something, a term that we're using is jargon or doesn't make sense or wouldn't resonate with the people that we're talking to. Or if we're maybe our best, like we're working with clients or something like that. And so we're like, well, we know our customers are working with clients, but maybe they're further along in that customer journey. And so the questions our clients are asking or the problems that they're having are going to be different than those people when they're at that buying stage before they become a client, right?
Yep.
So that's where this voice of customer research is so important, and also asking the right questions that are going to give us that insight. So did I get that right? Is that where?
Yeah. I think the beauty of voice of customer is that before I even get into a project with a client, I'm going to interview them, right, about what they think their offer is solving, who their people are, what their pain points are. What I do then when I'm doing the voice of customer and I'm talking to their clients is I match up where those two things align. And sometimes they align really well. Like my clients know exactly what those pain points are. And sometimes they are very far off only because they have been in their silo running their offer. And it's really finding that sweet spot of this is what I want to be the expert for and how I want to solve this, you know, pain point, problem, whatever you want to call it with my offer. And here's what my people actually need and want. So your voice of customer really validates and expands that for you. But then on the other side of things, it gives you that messaging that you need. So one of the things that I get into a lot is states of awareness. We always want to learn where our people are starting from. And when I talk about states of awareness, that's that scale of unaware, people don't even know they have a problem. We're usually not in the business of selling people on the idea that they have a problem. And then we usually meet people at the pain or problem aware state. So they know they have an issue, something's not right, but they don't yet know that there's like solutions out there. They're not sure what to do about it. Once we get them at the solution aware state, then they have this idea that there is a way to solve their problem, and they're going to be actually seeking out products that solve that problem. Then when we get to them to that product aware state, that's when we are educating them on our product, how it's different from our competitors, how our offer can actually address their pain points. And then we just have to seal the deal and get them to that most aware state. With your voice of customer, the number one thing you're digging up is where they're starting from. Because depending on where they're starting from, we're going to use different messaging and different amounts of copy, different amounts of nurturing to take them to that most aware state where they are ready to say, yes, you're the person I want to work with.
I love how you break that down. Now, so this unaware person, we should not even be trying to necessarily talk to, but with those other two levels, when should we be talking to that person that is maybe problem aware versus solution aware?
And those are the two people you'll meet most often, honestly. So we're going to find them usually at the problem aware state. They are hanging out in Facebook groups. They are posting on Reddit. They're reading the books. They're attending the free webinars. They're information gathering, right? Because they just know something's not right, but they're not really at that stage where they're seeking out solutions. At the solution aware state, that's where they're actually doing searches for, like, you know, how do I solve this problem? Where can I find a course on Facebook ads? Where can I get this? When we're meeting people at that stage, we're doing a little bit more education on how the solution addresses the problem. Even at that stage, even at that solution aware state, we are talking to them from a place of your problem can be solved. You belong here. Your problem can be solved. Take a deep breath. Now I'm going to introduce you to my product that addresses the solution. But those are typically the two places we're most often meeting people. And again, you're going to find that out from your voice of customer when you ask them, hey, when you first found out about me, what was going on in your life or your business that made you want to seek out my community, my webinar, my whatever the offer was that they took advantage of, join my email list, that kind of thing. Because when they're sharing about where they were at that particular moment when they decided to interact with you, you're going to learn, hey, they knew they had a problem, but they didn't know solutions existed, or no, they were seeking out solutions.
Okay. So I have a question for you that is very specific to me, but... Yes. But I'm not asking this with a selfish intent, because I do think this is, as we're taking these concepts and trying to figure out how to apply them, I think these are the types of questions that come up, right? So in my own business right now, we'll talk about the plug and pitch system. So my podcast guest plug and pitch system, most of the copy and content that I created around that was really for that problem aware. Now, the problem that they were aware of, and this is where I want to drill down a level deeper with you, right? Is the problem they were, that I was saying, it was like, okay, so you know, you have a problem that like you want to grow your audience, and connecting that to being a guest on a podcast, being guests on podcasts, that's going to be that solution for it. Right. And we're running ads right now, and it's with that messaging. But in the back of my head, I've been thinking, like, should I just make an ad that's more direct? Like, I know there's people out there that know that they want to be a guest on podcasts, and maybe they have been pitching, and maybe they're not getting results, or maybe they know they want to, but they just keep putting it off, or they don't know how to pitch. Like, I kind of want to test out that more direct, like that person that is already sold on podcast guesting, but maybe they haven't had a lot of success, or they just haven't gotten themselves into action yet. Like they can't find the time or these other excuses. Mm-hmm. So those are both problems, but one is much more specific. Like they're already, you know, is that how you would define solution aware? Like they already know podcast guesting works. And that's when we can talk more about the pain points of the actual pitching versus the more abstract pain points of the I want to grow my audience problem.
Yes, that is exactly it. You just broke it down beautifully, where the people that you're currently targeting with that messaging, they're not sold on the idea that podcast pitching is the way to grow their audience. So that's what you're trying to get them to. You're trying to convince them that podcast pitching is a great way to grow your audience, and they should look more into that. For the people that you're thinking about, and this would be a very interesting thing to learn from the people who have bought your plug and pitch system before, where they started from. Did they already know that they wanted to be pitching podcasts, but they didn't know where to start? Or they had tried themselves and they just weren't getting anywhere? Or they had hired a company to do it for them and that wasn't working out? You're going to learn a lot about what they've tried before too. And that, again, is that solution aware, where you're doing a little bit different messaging because they're already sold on the idea that they want to be pitching podcasts. So the pain point is different than the person who's like, I have no idea where to start in growing my audience, but I'm sick of having a stagnant number on my email list, right? This person is saying, I know I want to pitch podcasts and something about what I'm doing right now isn't working. How can your plug and pitch system help me?
Exactly. Okay. So I'm glad I'm thinking along the right lines there. And we actually just sent out a survey this morning. So that'll be interesting to see. Awesome. And my first thought with that is, okay, but those people, 95% of the people, that's not an exact number, but most of the people that have purchased were organic or warm leads that were on my list or following me on social. We just started running ads for it this month. So I'm curious, and we don't have enough data because it's like been a week of running ads.
Right.
So we don't have enough data on the new people, and we did not segment new and old, although I'm immediately thinking we probably should. But I'm curious if that warm group, if that could skew us, if that could skew the results of all these people that are giving us their experience, they already probably knew me on some level first versus marketing to cold. Do you find that like humans are humans and the problems are the same? Or do we need to look a layer deeper to be like, where are these people coming from?
I always do want to look at where people are coming from. I do think humans are humans and the problems they're experiencing are very similar across the board. How they talk about them might be different, but at the core, we're mostly experiencing the same problems. Where the difference comes in having a cold audience versus people who are warm, the people who are warm that have had experience with you, have been on your email list or listened to your podcast or anything of that nature, they're just going to need less to convince them that you're the right person for them to buy from. So that's where the difference lies. The problem might be the same, but they just need less time nurturing, convincing to actually make the decision to buy from you. A colder audience, you're going to need a little bit more time nurturing, education, convincing. So that's where the difference lies. It's not in the problem itself. It's more in how we're going to actually have to get in their shoes and convince them that you are the right person.
Okay. That helps a lot. That helps a lot. Okay. So now we're thinking about these different stages. What is our first step with starting to figure this out? And how many people do we need? I guess, yeah. What's the first step and how many people do we need to maybe be able to pull the audience and get a good insight here?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I think a huge sticking point with going out and surveying or interviewing your audience, and those are the two big tactics. If you have an existing audience, I'm usually talking about email surveys and phone interviews when it comes to voice of customer. The biggest sticking point is, well, I don't have a big enough audience, or I haven't been around long enough. You don't actually need voice of customer is an ongoing thing. So you do not need to start with a huge pool of people to respond to your survey. I've had clients where we've gotten 30 responses and gotten a really great array of voice of customer research. And then I've had clients where they send out one email and we get 250 responses. There is a point of diminishing returns with voice of customer where you're like, I'm not reading past the first 115 surveys, right? But don't let the fact that you might not have a huge audience stop you from getting started. Because even if you are brand new, and I'm actually working with a client right now who's just launching her business this spring. So she has no existing audience, but she knows who her target market, who she wants her target market to be. So we were able to go out into Facebook groups and into forums and just have people who had, because her target market is very focused on moms. So like there are mom communities everywhere, right? We were able to go there and know that these are not people who have actually bought from my client before, but they are prospects. And we sent surveys to them. So there's always a pool of people somewhere. And that's where I'm like, even if you can get 3 phone interviews, start there. If you can get 10 email surveys, start there. It's going to give you the jumping off point that's going to get you out of your own head and into your prospect's shoes.
Yes. Yes. No, that really helps. So with that survey, what types of questions should we think about including in that?
Yeah. The big things that I'm usually going for when I send out a survey is I want to learn about those pain points. I want to learn about their hesitations, and I want to learn about what an ideal outcome is for them. So when we're talking about pain points, that single best question that I've already mentioned once is, hey, when you found out about me or you joined my email list or however they had that first interaction with you, what was going on in your life or business that caused you to seek me out? From there, and people will answer these questions in different ways. And I actually love leaving questions open-ended so that people can interpret it however they want to. From there, we will learn what they were experiencing at that time. With the, you know, for this survey that we just did for this client who doesn't have an existing offer and these people didn't opt into something from her yet, we asked them, what does a typical day like look like for you with your kids? We're going to learn where their frustrations and their pain points lie. Then from there, the hesitations. This is my favorite thing to dive into because this is usually what we're addressing. When people are solution aware and they know that they have a problem, they know that solutions exist, we are addressing the things that are going to keep them from actually solving the problem. Because a lot of us get to that solution aware state where we're like, oh yeah, I could hire a house cleaner. I could do this. I could do that. But I've got all of these hesitations running through my mind about why I shouldn't do that. Those things are almost always going to come down to time and money. But how people talk about those things is going to differ. So the thing I usually ask is, if you've considered buying from me before, so I usually segment surveys between people who have bought and people who haven't. If you've considered buying me from me before, what's the number one thing that stopped you from doing that? And they will say time, they will say money. So then I ask the follow-up question of, what were the biggest contributing factors to that hesitation? And then people will dive into, you know, like, I just wrote for a membership and a mixed media membership. When we asked the question of what's the number one hesitation and people said money, then they shared more about like, I'm retired and I am on a fixed income. Well, we realized how many people in her community are retired and on a fixed income by asking that question. That wasn't something that she had considered before. So you get more details about what it actually means to be hesitant about time. And that's usually, you know, I don't have the time to commit, or I don't have the time to take part in whatever the offer is. And then money can be anything from finances to I don't like ongoing subscriptions to anything like that. You're going to learn way more about what that actually means to them and how they talk about it. So that's the pain points, that's the hesitations. And that's two, maybe three questions if you're trying to keep this really minimal. Then when I'm looking at ideal outcomes, I want to learn what for the moms for this offer for the client who's just launching this spring. The breadth of the offer is a video editing membership. So the question of what would it mean for you if in 2 to 4 weeks you had a fully edited video of your last month of memories coming at you? And we learned what their ideal outcome was. I would feel so relieved to know that my kids' memories are being captured by somebody that isn't me. Like things like that where you're like, what does an ideal outcome look like for them? If you've actually had an offer before that people have bought, then we ask them, hey, what has been the biggest shift in your life or your business since you bought this offer or took part in this course? And then we learn about what the outcomes they feel are important to call out are. And oftentimes, and then I'll even follow up with a question of like, what surprised you most? Because then they're like, hey, I bought this because I was expecting this outcome, but I was more delighted with this outcome. I see that a lot. People buy for one reason, but end up loving it or sticking around for a completely different reason. So this is a thing where you can anticipate this as the expert, but you cannot actually know what it is until you ask your people.
I've experienced this too, where sometimes we think we know it's going in one direction and it's so different. So, okay. I'm going to ask you, and then I want to come back to this, but how do we, when we're getting that type of feedback, especially feedback that's unexpected, mm-hmm. let's say a bunch of problems come back or a bunch of maybe outcomes that maybe we weren't expecting. What do we do with that data? How do we decide, okay, this is maybe the couple of pain points we're going to focus on, or geez, we didn't realize that this like unexpected outcome was such a thing. Like, you know, how do we determine if that is worthwhile to change our positioning or our messaging, right?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So that's where we have to have some discretion in taking what we can and leaving the rest. Because what I will find is that sometimes voice of customer will steer my clients down a path they don't need to go down. Because what you'll find is you're not only going to get the messaging feedback that you need and the empathy that you need to really have the copy that connects, you're also going to get feedback that's going to give you ideas for how to change your offer. And that might not be what you're actually after, but you're going to get product offer feedback no matter what. It's a blessing and a curse. I try to position it more as a blessing as long as you know, again, what to leave and what to take. If you come up where there are problems that you didn't anticipate, looking at trends first and foremost. So when we realized how common it was for this client's audience to be retired on a fixed income, that was something we wanted to address in the copy. That didn't mean she changed her pricing or her offer, but it was a really strong issue or hesitation that we needed to address in the copy. We took that, we addressed it in the copy because it was a trend. We saw it over and over and over again. And it's something that she can't control their income, but she can address it and help them overcome that hesitation if it makes sense. Then there are the pieces of feedback that you'll get where you're like, I understand that's a problem they have. There's nothing I can do about it, or it's just not something my offer solves and they're not my ideal customer. That's the other big thing that you have to have discretion on, is when you're reading through your voice of customer, realizing that not everybody is your ideal prospect. Not everybody's going to buy from you. So you're going to have people that answer your surveys or give you feedback where you're like, that is great. And it makes me realize that you are not the person I'm targeting. So it gets you really clear on who you are targeting. So being able to look at it and say, you know what, that is a very valid pain, but I'm not the one that's the expert in addressing that. Or this offer in particular is not the thing that's going to address that. And that's totally okay. It's more when we see the trends that really resonate with what we're doing, that then we bring that into the messaging. We answer that in FAQs. We see what kinds of myths need to be busted or beliefs that they might have that we need to help them overcome. But it's really finding that sweet spot of what makes the most sense for my offer and who I do want to target, and then leaving the rest.
Thank you for those examples too, because it's such a unique situation for each person, but hearing these examples gives us some of that insight of how we're able to navigate that, because it's not just getting this information, it's doing something with it and knowing what we're going to keep, seeing those patterns, but also knowing maybe which ones to gloss over, quote unquote, throw out. And sometimes people who actually have paid you for your offer are not your ideal customer or client too, right? Absolutely. So even if you're surveying your customers, it doesn't mean that they're all people who you want to be finding hundreds or thousands of more people just like them.
And that's a really important distinction of when I am initially getting into a project with my client, we need to look at whether the people that they have been serving are the people they want to continue to serve. And that's a really important thing to know going into any point in your business, asking yourself that question of, hey, I'm going to ask these people for feedback, but are they indicative of the people that I want to keep growing and serving with?
Exactly. Now, you mentioned doing phone call interviews, and this is something that you did with some of my customers and clients in the past that I am like, I have never even heard of this before. This was a number of years ago. So where does that fit in, and how are those different than the survey?
Yeah. So email surveys are definitely the less scary thing to put out there, right? And email surveys are great because you can hit a lot of people at once, get a lot of feedback without a lot of time commitment on your side. You can leave them open. But the kind of barrier with email surveys is that you're asking questions, and however they interpret them, they're going to give you their feedback, and there's no room for back and forth, right? I can get more out of one phone interview than 20 surveys sometimes, just by having a back and forth with somebody. How I typically go about it is I will send out a survey, and then I will actually read through the survey responses, and any survey responses that really light up or show a red flag for me, or I'm like, I want to know more about that, those are the people I will reach out to for phone interviews. So they've already offered feedback. They're clearly willing to talk. And then I will reach out to them for a phone interview. Other times I'll have a client say, no, I know I want you to talk to these 3 to 5 people. But the beautiful thing about getting on a phone interview is it is a back and forth conversation, which can be scary, but your clients and customers like to talk. Typically. And again, it's about coming into it, asking questions that are very much about them. What is your experience with this? How does it feel when you this? Really making it very focused on them, not your offer. We do want to relate it back to their experience with your offer, but it's very much, we want to learn about what it was like experiencing it from their shoes. With phone interviews, like I said, I always recommend that you have somebody else do your voice of customer, but if you can't, it's totally okay. But I also like to incentivize. So time is always of the essence with people, right? Like it's our most scarce resource. So typically I'm saying like, hey, jump on a call with me and I'll buy you a coffee, or, you know, my client will send you a $20 gift card to XYZ, just to incentivize and give them a little carrot for getting on the phone with you.
Yes, I find that helps a lot too. That little extra bit to get them to say yes and commit that time. So if someone isn't working with a copywriter, who else could they have do these phone calls? Has like other team members, or like, could a friend do it? Or is this really like, you gotta just hire a copywriter to do this?
No, absolutely not. Anybody, honestly, like if I did voice of customer in my own business and I had my assistant do the phone interviews, she's not a copywriter, but she knows my business. So she knew where I was going and what I was trying to learn. That's the most important thing. You could have your mom do them if you wanted to, right? As long as they know what you are after, anybody that can go in, it's almost better if they don't have, like I said, any sort of biases and they're just there to ask the questions. But the most important thing is you find somebody that is curious and knows how to ask follow-up questions. So, and one of the things, like the easiest thing to do as a follow-up question is, can you tell me more about that? because oftentimes people do have more. And I wrap every phone interview with, is there anything that I haven't asked about that you'd like to share? The gut reaction is, no, I think I got it all. Actually, and then I get 5 more minutes of talking. So it's pretty funny when you give people the opportunity, they will open up. But you certainly can have anybody do this. If you don't have a copywriter, you can have a teammate do it. You can have your sister do it. You can have your mom do it, a friend do it, a fellow business owner, anybody, somebody in your mastermind, as long as they know what goals you're after and what kinds of questions you want to ask.
Oh, good. I love that advice. And I'm thinking about my mom. I'm like, she would actually be very good at interviewing people, but she has like massive biases. She would not be able to not be biased about me. So that's
I can't believe you said that about Jacqueline. Yeah.
What? My daughter? No. So funny. So when it comes to, for those people listening who are thinking about working with a copywriter, what is something we should look for? I know with myself, it just feels so hard of like, okay, but it's my voice. It's like as a go-to gal personal brand, it feels extra hard to hire someone else to write for us, right? So how do we know we're hiring someone who can take on our voice, or just any questions we should be thinking about in that process?
Yeah, I think if I were to hire somebody to write for me, I'd have that same reservation of how can you encapsulate my voice better than I can, right? And I've run into this with many, many clients. The most important things are going to be that your copywriter is willing to do some research. They're willing to talk to your clients and your customers. They're willing to put themselves out there and learn from them. But also your copywriter should be spending quite a bit of time with you. So I start all of my engagements with at least a 90-minute kickoff call. And then we're usually going back and forth on Boxer. I'm listening to their podcasts or watching their webinars. So I'm getting really, really in tune with how they talk. And then it's not so much like, yes, I need to be adopting your voice. When I go out and do that research, I'm not trying to replace your voice. I'm trying to line up how your customers and your clients talk about their experiences or about what you do with how you talk. So it's really just fortifying your voice. And the copywriter that goes out and does that research is going to know how to bring those two things together. But yes, they need to be my greatest skill in my business that has served me time and time again is listening. Because the better I can listen, the more I can step into the shoes, not only of your clients and your customers, but also you as the expert.
Okay. So thank you so, so much for sharing all of this valuable insight and like step-by-step things we can implement. Really appreciate you being so open about your process. How can we stay in touch with you?
Yeah. So I've actually put together just a weekish long crash course into getting started with voice of customer in your business, no matter if you're starting with a large audience or a small audience. You can find that at sarahfrandina.com/go-to-gal. Sarah with no H, of course, I should mention that. But yeah, that's pretty much where I hang out the most on my website. I'm not huge on social media, but I do linger there. Trying to limit the screen time lately. It's not going as well as I hope. But if you head over to sarahfrandina.com/go-to-gal, you can jump into that little crash course and I'll give you just a few more actions you can take to start getting that voice of customer that's going to help you stop staring at that blank page and really reinforce what you're after as the expert that you are.
Amazing. And of course, we'll link to that in the show notes as well. Thank you so, so much, Sarah.
Thank you, Jacqueline.
Can I just say thank you so much for listening? I don't think I say it enough, but I love that you are here. If you enjoyed today's episode, or if you've been getting value from this podcast, would you do me a quick favor? Head on over to iTunes and leave a rating and review. When you leave a rating and review, it basically tells iTunes that they need to spread the word and tell more people about this podcast. And I am on a mission to get the word out. I'm so grateful for your support. We want to make sure to shout you out too. So if you do leave a rating review, keep your eyes and ears open. We will be either shouting out on the podcast or on Instagram stories.